And welcome back. We're here with this podcast, the second part of two on being right. And this podcast is brought to you by Berman University Center for Peace and Justice. So we're focusing on conflict transformation, offering education, which includes things like on-site workshops and coaching here in Central Alberta. Welcome to our guests. And first and up front here is Agnes. Agnes, you said a few things last time. We got some great feedback on part one of being right, about right and wrong being rooted in our education system. Welcome. Say a little something about yourself and about that again.
Well, I've put in quite a few years in the education system. I'm also a psychotherapist, and I've done quite a bit of work in peace and justice. So I'll go back to the education system, which we talked about last time. I think one of the things that I think about when I think about the education system is how we need to provide space in our classrooms for our students to be able to, I'm going to put this in quotes, speak their mind. Okay. Not so much that they just say anything, but there needs to be a space where they can let their opinions be addressed, so that it's not just a teacher at the front doing all the talking, but that students can also say what they need to say and to be seen and heard without judgment or without feeling like their words or their ideas are not important.
Okay, thanks. And also with us, Bruce, say a few things about yourself, some of your credentials. Also, you brought up in our first part of being right was a little more of a personal approach, talking about you and your spouse. And
yes. So, excuse me. I have been teaching for the last 15 years at university, and my main focus is conflict. I teach other classes as well, but conflict resolution has been my focus. Before that, I was a pastor. As far as the illustration, I was talking, I think, about my wife and I, and we have this, well, we have all kinds of running conflicts, but one of them is about news. I love to listen to news, and she loves to talk about news, and of course, I don't like her to interrupt the news. Anyhow, I think I'm right, and she thinks she's right, because the relationship is important. So how do you have a relationship if you don't talk? So we are getting a little better at that, but I wouldn't say we've made any huge, amazing breakthroughs.
Everybody can relate. This is great. Agnes, getting back to what you were starting to say there, let's dive into that creating space, the whole respect thing.
I think what has to happen in, are you talking about education? You're
yes.
Referring to that? Okay, I think what has to happen in our classrooms is that there has to be more time for the students. Very often in our classrooms, students have like within a class, which is in an hour or 45 minutes to an hour, each student probably has less than a minute to speak. And I think we need to set up both emotional spaces and physical spaces so that students have time to express themselves and to say what's on their mind and to be able to be validated for it and to be able to hear what other people say and to be able to respect other people, what other people are saying, even if it's different, even if it's off the wall, so to speak, and to, in listening to other people, realize that, there is some validity to what the other person is saying, that there is some right in what they're saying, that it's not just black and white, all right or all wrong, but there is some right in what everyone is saying, that there's some validity in what everyone is saying.
Right. And under this second part of being right conversation, we want to offer some of those practical pieces that help people understand the playing field, where we're at, and the part we play into it. And that's what you're saying from an educational standpoint of it all, but also just in our practical ongoing going lives as to who we are and how we play a role in conflict or the transformation of removing ourselves out of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Bruce, had brought up a little something too in regards to all this for practical purposes. You want to talk a little about difficult conversations.
Yes, Difficult Conversations is a book I use in my classroom, one of the main textbooks. It's by Douglas Stone, Harvard University Business Department project. He wrote it with a couple of other colleagues. I think the main point, or at least one of the main points in this book, is that we need to move from the idea that I am right and you are wrong to the idea that I need to learn from you because you actually might be more right than I think. In fact, you might even be totally right and I might be totally wrong or somewhere in between. So instead of defending my position, instead of attacking your position, I begin to get curious about you. I want to understand you. Why do you think what you're thinking? This is very interesting. I hadn't thought of it from that point of view before. And so instead of defending myself and showing you how right I am, I'm learning from you. And there's a good chance that you will also begin to move into the same gear. And you might say, well, let me learn from you as well.
Okay, the first question I have when I hear Agnes and you, Bruce, say the things you have is when a person in a conflict situation, knowing this is a practical application in being right conversation, when a person says that they are absolutely right and are talking to another person who they're then saying is just totally wrong, that would be a red flag for you?
Well, I have been there. I have done that myself. But yes, now, as I've grown a little bit more in experience, yes, that's a very big red flag because I know that none of us is entirely right about much of anything. And realizing that has really freed me. You know, this is a huge burden to be always right. It's just a huge burden. And I feel pretty good now knowing that I'm not always right. In fact, I'm frequently wrong.
And this doesn't allow the space that you, Agnes, are saying should be existing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It reminds me of an author, Adam Kahane, who talks in his book, Collaborating with the Enemy. He said, as long as we look at the other person as wrong, we look at them as our enemy. And if we look at them as our enemy, then we don't have to worry because we're all right. Everything's black and white. Nothing's complex. And we can look at them as the enemy, the person who's wrong, and we can sit back and relax because we don't have anything more to do because, of course, they're wrong. And as long as we look at the other person as the enemy, we're not going to resolve any conflicts.
This podcast, brought to you by Berman University's Center for Peace and Justice, is the supporting role of why we get to talk about these kind of things. This is where we focus on conflict transformation. We offer education, including on-site workshops and coaching in Central Alberta. And we're relatively new, but we are certainly getting our voice out there. And we are just excited that we could have guests like you, Bruce, and Agnes on this podcast. A couple of questions, maybe first for you, Bruce. Is conflict bad?
Is conflict bad? Well, no and yes. Conflict, would you like me to tell you why I say that?
Sure.
Or do you want a short answer? Okay, well, conflict is bad, obviously. Most of us think conflict is bad because it can be very destructive, damaging to relationships. Conflict, at the same time, has huge potential for good. I personally don't believe there's any love without conflict. I think love is a good thing. I don't think there's any learning without conflict. I think learning is a good thing. So low-level conflict is essential for life, for happy, productive, fulfilling life.
And Agnes, one of the things that I keep thinking about when you talk about making that space is what we do with that space. And of course, you've addressed that, but I want to ask a little about this concept of admitting you're wrong and its role in that. Some people use big words like confession, but I once heard that if both parties could, without being accusational, say something about how they contribute to the conflict, that that might be the first step to healing within the space that you're talking. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's really important. And when I talk about it, having this, creating a space, I'm thinking, I'm thinking about it in terms of families and in terms of marriages and so on when I think about my work as a psychotherapist. But I also think about it in terms of my work in the classroom, because we would create these circles in the classroom. And so if there had been a conflict out on the playground, what I would do is I would bring the students back into the classroom, and we would have a circle where we would all talk about what happened in the playground, and each student would be able to give their reaction to what happened. And eventually, students would say things like, "Well, I guess I did do da 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 da." And eventually, it wouldn't be a matter of just one, you know, the person who did the harm or the person who did the harming, but there would be other students who would say, "Yeah, and I did this too. Yeah, and I pushed her to do this or that kind of thing." And eventually, a lot of people in the classroom would say, "You know what? We were all involved." And the really good thing about it was, toward the end of the year, I wouldn't be calling the circle anymore. The students would come to me and say, "You know what, Mrs. Strike, we need a circle." So they were learning, as Bruce was talking about, they were learning that coming together and talking together about things is the way to deal with conflict.
Laughing at ourselves. Say a little about that, either of you?
I used to be way too serious about my opinions and my ideas. I think laughing about myself has really freed me up to acknowledge that some of my ideas are really off the wall when I step back and see them.
Right. The other approach, or the way you say it, I think, is don't take yourself too seriously, right? That's a different version of laughing at yourself.
That's pretty important.
Okay. Yeah. And celebrating. Say something on that, Agnes. I once understood that if you can move well through conflict, that it's worth celebrating. And some people, I don't think, do this. And is there value there?
I think there really is. I think, and I'll give you an example. I work with the Red Deer Rural Restorative Justice Group. And at the end of every conference that we have, one of the things that we all do together after the conference has been resolved and we have written our contract for the person who has done the harm is we get together and we do what we call, and I'm going to put it in quotes, we break bread together. Nice. So that the person who has been harmed and the person who has done the harming and all of their support people get together and we eat together and we talk together and we share food together. Right. And I think that whole idea of sharing food together and eating together is a very celebratory kind of thing.
So earlier on that book you referred to, I forget the author's name, but Collaborating with the Enemy, what was
this? Yes, Adam Kahane.
Okay, so then there was something about classifying the person who doesn't see things your way as the person in the enemy category, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then eating together would not be a place where you would find your enemy, which is why that's a step to resolving conflict.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and that's beautiful. Boy, I think it's true. If I think about the people that I eat with, they're always like-minded, maybe as some people refer to it as the echo chamber, and that would be the table that I set, and I think most people set. But if you end up eating with somebody that you're trying to resolve conflict with or have resolved conflict with, that would be a strong indication that you are on a healthy road to redeeming your relationship, right?
I think it is, but I just want to put a caveat in there. Okay. In terms of, I think when we eat together, we're not necessarily, and I'm going to put this in quotes too, we're not necessarily unified, or we're not necessarily all thinking the same way, but we've come to a place where we can see each other as people. We can see each other as we can see each other's humanity. And so that we don't have to have the same ideas, but we can see each other's humanity and we can respect each other as people. And we can go forward in a new way, I think.
I want to touch on your book just as we close, Bruce. You had made reference to it, so our listeners maybe can get that information again.
Yes, an excellent book, Difficult Conversations by Douglas Stone and a couple other authors. But this is really a well-known book and very practical.
It comes out of Harvard University?
Harvard University Business Department people put that together.
Okay, excellent. Well, this has been, again, refreshing. It's very difficult understanding conflict, especially when you're in it, to know how to work your way out of it and to have some healthy tips and insights and some books to read to give our listeners something to chew on, to understand prior to the conflict they're getting into, or maybe they're in it already. That is what we were trying to do, tips on addressing being right, as we called this program. And so this is part two, and thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Agnes, and this podcast then brought to you again by Berman University's Center for Peace and Justice. And we're focusing on conflict transformation, offering education, which includes the likes of on-site workshops and coaching here in Central Alberta. My name is Rick Abba, and it is great to have you with us once again for this podcast. Have a good day.